The Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone. And members, I'll start by, you know what? I want to start by recognizing two of our members. I'll get teary-eyed, but we are going to miss two of our members who have announced their retirement, and that's going to change things forever around here. So thank you for all of your hard work and all the hard work that you are about to give us over the next 2 weeks. I want to, and we'll have more chances to recognize your work over the next few months. I wanted to announce that we do have a budget target, and we do have a deadline for our budget. And it is very aggressive, as I had mentioned last week. So I just want members to know and the public to know that we will be passing our budget out of this division a week from Thursday, which is March 4th, Thursday, March 4th. And so we will, between today and this Thursday, we'll hear from the Office of Energy Security and Commerce, and by the end of this week, we will have heard from all of our departments and all the governor's budget recommendations. And so I think probably, we haven't really discussed this with staff, but I think probably what we'll do is next Tuesday we'll take any public testimony or other input on the budget, and then on Thursday we'll be passing out our budget. The target that we have for our division for cuts, it's all a negative number, of course, is $19,150,000. So we have a very significant amount of cuts ahead of us. So it will not be an easy process. And that compares, you know, the way that Mr. Mueller showed us in the spreadsheet, sort of pulling out apples and apples in the governor's budget, this is higher than the governor's cuts by a few million dollars in our areas. But his is more in the just under $16 million. But again, most of the governor's cuts are from other funds, not from general fund. They're from transferring from other funds into the general fund. So just kind of gives you the lay of the land and the difficult job that we have in front of us. So keep that in mind as we go through the recommendations today. And we're going to be needing everybody's ideas and suggestions about how to accomplish this job with the least amount of damage, I guess, is the only word I can think of, to the really important public services that these state agencies provide to our state. So with that, Senator Vickerman.
If you think that cut's bad, how would you like to be chair of the agriculture, the little bittiest part of the whole budget? I got to cut for under $18 million. Can't cut veterans, so you know what it's going to do to aid. But I have any choice.
Well, good luck, Senator Vickerman. That's not going to be easy, absolutely. So good luck to you as well. Let's bring up Bowser and get started with the – well, we had an introduction to some Bowser issues last time, but welcome back, Mr. Jaski.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. John Jaski, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. Since your last meeting, we had a chance to update the document in front of you. I've been corresponding with Mr. Mueller until about an hour ago, I think. I'm trying to make sure we have the same information that we're working from. And so the February 23rd document that you've got in front of you is the summary of the details that were in the governor's budget recommendations, which we talked about just briefly last week. So with that, I will just walk through those, Madam Chair, members. If you have any questions or comments, certainly feel free to interrupt me. As you can see, we were instructed to provide 3% and 6% reductions, 3% for operations and 6% for programs. These reductions are in addition to the reductions that were made last year, which are listed on page 3 of this document. You can see the cuts that were made to those two categories last year. They were 9.7 and 11.9%. So the items you see before you are those for the supplemental budget this year. So fiscal year 10, we've got reductions to two areas of the Southeast flood response, which, you know, we will be reducing the labor force that was working on that program. We do expect that we will complete all of that work because of the ability to bring in some federal funding and also rely on the local governments to carry out the work of overseeing those projects. The grants have all been made, the projects selected, and so really now it's getting the work done on the ground. So we will be reducing a small amount of our operating portion of that work. In fiscal year 11, there are three areas of reduction proposed. The first one is, again, the remaining part of that work that we were doing in the Southeast flood response. The result of that is going to be that we're going to basically end that work 6 months earlier than expected. And I think, you know, that's not going to be catastrophic, certainly, because we do expect that the local governments will carry on most of the remaining tail end completion stuff. The next category is drainage assistance. This will result in a reduction in the drainage work group efforts. We will keep that work group and the things that it's doing fully supported. Some of the work that supplements that, though, the drainage manual and some other work will not occur. We're looking for other alternative sources to do that kind of one-time type of activity. And the last one in that list is the Wetland Conservation Act oversight, and you can see there will be similar components to that. There were funds that were added a couple of years ago to supplement the Wetland Conservation Act core oversight and enforcement, and what this reduction does is take most of that away and take us back to the base level of support for the Wetland Conservation Act program. Turn the page and go on to page 2 then for the program reductions. The first one is a reduction to what was a general fund item under Clean Water Legacy, the Ag Wetland Restoration Projects. We had money for both the studies and implementation, and this money will then remove a portion of that implementation funding that we hope can be replaced with USDA sources or other sources that would be applicable once those studies are completed. And on to FY11. There are reductions that are all of these that I listed, Madam Chair, members, are from the general fund, so there are no transfers from other funds in this proposal. First one is the cost share vegetative buffers. This is a program that was established in 2007. It's been successful. We propose a small reduction in the grants to write contracts to get those buffers in place. The next one is the drainage assistance grants that went to drainage authorities to upgrade their records and their to modernize those from some of the old paper maps and diagrams and records into more of an electronic modern system. The remaining amount of money that's available for that program will be removed under this proposal. The next two then deal with the Wetland Conservation Act oversight and enforcement. Both of those were additional funding provisions that were put in place in 2007 when we made major changes to the Wetland Conservation Act program and statute, and these two items then would reduce and remove those two additional provisions from the budget. And then the last one, Madam Chair, members, is a this is the one I've spent some time with Mr. Mueller trying to make sure he understands pretty well. We have a program, the Cost Share Conservation Program, which has the ability to take funds that don't get used in the year they're appropriated because of either a delay in the project for landowner reasons or because we've got more federal money to the project than we would have otherwise expected or because the cost of the project is lower than what we would have originally estimated. So those funds then get returned are re-granted, and that provision has been in place for a very long time. What we were proposing here is that the amount in that program would be reduced, but we reduced by this amount, $310,000, from the return funds rather than up front. And so it would really be a reduction for the projects that are not as ready, so to speak, rather than an upfront appropriation reduction. So if Mr. Mueller wants to add to that, I'll let him comment.
Mr. Mueller?
Madam Chair and members, the return grant funds previously, Bowser, if they had a return grant, it would always be shown in the general fund as a carry forward because most of these grants are available till spent. So if they award a grant and then it gets returned, the way it's counted now, it moves over to a special revenue fund, And there's actually about a, trying to remember, close to a little over $1 million of return grants, I think, of all the ones. And they're showing 310 of that will then be credited back to the general fund as a revenue. So it's a little bit, counting-wise, this is a little bit different way that we look at the return grants. Like I said previously, up until this biennium, the return grants got put back into the general fund. Now they go over to a different fund. And I'm still working with finance about whether that's a good way of doing things because there could be some double counting and things like that. But it's nothing that Bowser did. It's something more legislatively and with Department of Budget, Management and Budget, a decision about how we treat return grants. And here they're just saying they want to take 310 of that and credit to the general fund. There's more there of return grant, but I think their intention would be whatever's left, they would re-grant out again. So I don't know if Jessica wants to add or change to that. Or
Mr. Jess.
Madam Chair, members, Mr. Mueller and the finance folks are working out the how you process it, but it is a real reduction that carries forward into future years. It is general fund, so it's really just a matter. The way I look at it from a practical point of view is that we're letting these projects kind of more self-select rather than reducing it off the top or saying those that are least ready would not be funded. We wouldn't have money to go back out. It would be a reduction. So it will be a reduction long term.
But the remainder that's in this special fund, I don't quite understand how that works, that it was grants that never happened. I mean, the grants happened, but the work never happened, and so the money comes back, so how is it self-selected? What's the next step? You decide where it goes after that, right? You give it to some other grant that's ready to go?
Madam Chair, that's exactly correct. We re-grant the money for the next highest priority projects in line, and certainly there's always been more than we can fund, and that's not been a problem. But as Mr. Mueller described, the way that the financial systems tracked it have changed, but the fact of the matter is it is a permanent reduction from the general fund.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chasky, I'd like to understand this chart, like fiscal year 11, a little better. Mm-hmm. It says 6% reduction. Does that mean that each of these programs has been reduced 6%, or is that a cumulative 6% from an aggregate amount?
Mr.
Chasky. Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, that is a 6% is the $630,000 number there, so it's an aggregate. I don't have that right in front of me right now, but I can certainly get you the portion that's reduced. I can tell you, I mean, it's pretty simple. I can probably just explain it. The drainage assistance, wetland conservation, ec enforcement, and violations, those pieces would all be reduced on 100%. There would be no longer any funding in those categories. And those, again, as I explained earlier, Madam Chair and Senator, are things that were added as, you know, pieces above the base amount for that program in 2007.
Madam Chair, Mr. Jasky, that's very helpful. I think it would be helpful to me if we knew how much money, how many funds were left after these reductions. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something Mr. Mueller can provide for us, but if you have that, it would be.
Mr. Jasky.
Madam Chair and Senator, I can certainly get you that information very, very quickly. I just won't have it with me right in front of you.
That would be great, very helpful. Thank you for asking.
And then finally,
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, I think I have it. Senator Fredrickson, the cost share vegetation buffers, the $20,000 reduction, like I said, that's 6%. There's actually, that's about a $900,000 per year program. So it would be $20,000 reduction in fiscal year 11 and then ongoing. Then, like you said, the drainage assistance cost share. I'm trying to see if I have that. I don't have that base amount, but.
Madam Chair, maybe I can help. Those three items, the base amount is the same as the amount being proposed for the reduction. So
okay,
it's 100%.
So the rest of, the other three items are 100% reductions. Mm. Yeah.
So So what does that mean, Mr. Jasky, that if we, the WCA violations oversight and DNR enforcement, if you're, what part of our enforcement program does that represent? If we're zeroing those out, what's left?
Sure. Madam Chair, these are, as I mentioned, in 2007 there were changes to the Wetland Conservation Act, and there were some additional funding provided specifically for the 11-county metro area and in the oversight and granting area to local governments. What we'll be back to is basically the same level of funding that we had prior to 2007 for both the enforcement, for the local government administration, and for the state oversight. So we're back to 2006 levels of funding for that program.
Okay. Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Jasky, looking at the WCA violations DNR enforcement, even without this funds, DNR would still be required to do enforcement, would they not? Conservation officers would still have the obligation of enforcing state law with or without this funding.
Madam Chair and Senator Frickson, that's correct, as well as other licensed peace officers, you know, city and county officials could also do it, but primarily it's been a DNR conservation officer enforcement, and this would remove, they've got, you know, an appropriation, as does Bowser, as do local governments to administer the program. This simply is taking away this additional component that was added in 2007.
Okay. Does that make sense, Senator Frederickson?
Madam Chair, it does. The question in my mind is, why are we funding conservation officers from two different funds? Why isn't it all in DNR? Maybe another question.
Why are we funding it from Bowser's budget and giving it to DNR? Mr. Jasky?
Madam Chair, I think it's... it hasn't been a problem. We've worked closely with the DNR to make sure that, you know, what they're doing is supporting what the local governments are doing in terms of the program. It was a remnant, I think, of that 2007 changes that were made, and there was supplemental funding to support that, and it got written that way in 2007, Senator Frederickson, and I don't know exactly why anymore.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Mr. Jasky, I'm not questioning you. I'm kind of asking ourselves why would we do that? Why would we fund one activity from more than one source?
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, the way I remember it, in 2007, all of the money was going to be going to counties for enforcement of wetland violations. But what happened is some of the state was let off some of the changes that were made. It was more severe restrictions were in the metropolitan area. So the decision was that the money that would have otherwise gone to those counties outside of that 11-county metro area, that money would go to DNR to continue to elevate their enforcement. And that was just part of the deal. It could have been put in the DNR budget, and it probably would have made more sense to just have it there, but it was left in the Bowser budget because that's where the money was that we had in 2007. To do it, and it was kind of split up that way. But you're right, because DNR has a general fund base budget for enforcement that they've had since 1991, since the Wetland Conservation Act was enacted, and that would continue on. This was just the elevated amount that was added in 2007.
So that just begs the question, so what happened in the last couple of 2-3 years? Was there any... Is this all the money that we appropriated then? Has any of it been used? And was there any enhanced enforcement in the metro area or 11-county area?
Well, Madam Chair, the answer is yes, there was. And there was the money went out in two fashions. One is it went as a transfer to DNR, and they did some stepped-up enforcement. They were doing some flyovers and things like that that were above and beyond the base amount of enforcement. We granted the money out on to each of the local governments in the 11-county metro area based on a workload analysis of, you know, amount of wetlands, amount of building permits, things like that we then granted that money above and beyond. The local governments knew that it was not a permanent amount. It had been repeated once, but they understood it was not part of the base allocation for the program. And so they did some stepped-up education and enforcement work, but it was the DNR piece that we transferred via a work plan they provided us, and they have the details that I can get you in terms of that work plan. We'll be doing that for FY10. That's also already taken place, so they've got that funding and are spending it for that purpose.
All right. Thank you. Should we move on? Oh, do you want to go through the last page?
Madam Chair, I referred to that earlier. It was simply just the results from what we did last year. And you can see the reductions that were made in which programs and the amounts that were reduced last year and the percentages. That was just a reference piece from last year.
All right. And then were there unallotments on this list, or these were in the budget?
Madam Chair, yes. These were all in the budget. There were not allotments, unallotments.
All right. Okay, are there any other questions then for Mr. Jaski? So that's all you have. Thank you very much for your presentation. All right, let's move to the MPCA. Ms. Hallbeck, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members.
We have a handout.
You should have two handouts.
Okay.
For the record, I'm Myrna Hallbeck, the Chief Financial Officer for the agency. Today, while you have the two handouts, I will, one provides you the more detail on kind of a spreadsheet format so that you can follow from the exact appropriations. But I will do most of my talking from the handout that looks like this, that has a little bit of the words on it. In the first page is the unallotments that happened in FY 2009. And I won't talk in great detail on those because we're about the current budget process. But just to give you a little bit of background where we were in a year ago, January 2009, the unallotments, we were able to achieve those through administrative cuts and through grants that were returned to the agency. So, again, grants that we had funded through the Clean Water Partnership that had occurred years earlier coming back to us that were too late to re-grant out and have people complete the project. So those were returned to the general fund. So we were able to do quite a bit in January 2009 for the $1.4 million in that respect. In June, the holdbacks from that really were we eliminated the between FY 2010 and 2011, we eliminated the small amount of money that was in the land program that was left after the budget process. So we eliminated that. We reduced some educational and ordinance development in our stormwater program. And then we took a general additional 2.25% reduction in our cross-media program, and we once again reduced the administrative work. So again, trying to hold our programs to the extent possible harmless from the reductions, make sure that we still maintain our permitting, compliance, and enforcement goals.
Ms. Hallbeck, we heard a number of us have heard a lot about the Living Green Expo and the decision to back off of sponsoring that. Can you give us an update there on how much money that involved from the agency's participation?
Madam Chair, members, what we did with the Living Green Expo is that money actually came into a special revenue that paid for it, much like our training would pay for. And so it was a revolving account. Since the time we decided that we really needed to focus staff in other areas of our programs, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership has picked that up. We have moved the money that was left in our account to that partnership so that they can put the expo on this year. We have also given them all of our databases and the information so they have it. We have a staff who is working with them to make sure that they understood how we did it. It was originally intended to be this much bigger partnership, and so we're going back to that model with it. But the Living Green Expo will still occur.
It will carry on. Okay.
On page 2, first wanted you to understand as we went through and developed our supplemental budget plan, what we used for guiding principles. So we wanted to be able to maintain to the extent possible our permitting compliance programs, those other standard functions that you see, make sure that we can implement our Clean Water Fund objectives, and make sure we maximize the federal stimulus dollars that we're helping with wastewater, clean diesel, the site cleanups. And then what we're in the process of doing is really aligning our prevention work to make sure we are improving compliance, providing assistance so we reduce the pollutants in our discharges, and then increasing waste reduction and recycling. We're intending to move our closed landfill program to maintenance in the next probably less than half a dozen years. We're on target to do that. And what that would mean is rather than needing bonding money and doing construction, we'd be able to just operate, mow the lawns, make sure our gas and our monitoring systems are running. That will allow us, we believe, to reduce the money that's transferred from the environmental fund into the remediation program and provide more funds available for the other environmental work. So that's a focus of our efforts. And then, of course, to the extent we want to really use and have efficient and effective grant programs, the Clean Water Funds, they go out to local government, so we want to do that. Make sure our federal stimulus are spent. And by doing the federal stimulus, that puts us in line to receive additional dollars. So when states couldn't meet targets like the February 17th and allocating all their money, that money has to go back to the federal government, and then they can reallocate that out to states. So we potentially will receive more in our site cleanups. We have more than enough projects. We have allocated all those projects, and we're moving forward with them. So we are, as you will see, there. When we move through the budget, we are going to be reassigning staff to that work. There's funding there, and there's priority work to get done. So that's part of the objectives when we were moving through this that we intended to achieve. The next you will see is the short table on our reduction plan, and these are the numbers that we submitted across all funds. The special revenue fund, those are programs where, for instance, training is in. That's also where our indirect plan is. So the charge that we do across the agency to pay for administrative dollars. So when we're cutting many of the administrative dollars, it's out of the special revenue. And then our environmental and our remediation. And with that, I just thought I'd spend a little bit of time walking through each of those reductions, first on the operating side and then on the grant side.
Ms. Hallback, before you do that, do you have a percent? Did you have a percent target that you were working from, or that can you estimate what they are?
The percentage on the operating side is 3%. The grant, 6%.
All right, same as Bowser. Go ahead, please.
So from the general fund, our administrative support areas, again, we will be taking reductions and we will be reassigning staff to funded work. So water fund, we will be doing reassigning to the federal stimulus work. And so our movement is that. Across the board, you'll see 16 positions impacted. About half of those positions are actual vacancies, and we won't be filling vacancies.
She's talking about the constitutional clean water.
The environmental assistance and cross-media area, again, we will be reassigning staff to vacancies. We have some vacancies in our Clean Water Fund work, and so we consider that priority work, and so we'll be moving staff with their skills to that area.
Ms. Hallback, can you just back up for a second? I think you said you were going to transfer staff from the Clean Water Fund to the federal stimulus work first. Did I hear that wrong?
I probably spoke wrong.
Oh, okay.
No, it will not be from clean water to federal stimulus. We have to be careful with many of the federal stimulus not to supplant as well as the Clean Water Fund. But we do have people that are paid under our general fund that are doing neither of those that we can move into that have skills usable both in the Clean Water Fund activities and federal stimulus. So they'll be moving from these projects or program areas into those.
So what will they, can you just tell us when you make those transfers, what are we giving up? What are those staff doing now that will be reduced?
Those staff are currently doing activities either in special report activities, so they still have the science background to work in clean water fund activities, or they may be doing policy work, and we're going to reduce the staff we have working in that, but came from the leaky underground tanks program, the LUST program, and so they can go back to doing that work. And so they do have the skills, but we'll be reducing kind of that more general, focusing on really the permitting and the cleanup activities. Less on broad education, less on general report writing, and more on the actual cleanup and permitting activities. And then for Clean Water Fund, getting TMDLs done, getting that monitoring done. Then again, in the special revenue fund, this, as I explained, is much of our administrative support indirect fund. So this is where we will have to reduce travel. We will be freezing the out-of-state travel. Except for that, we need with some of our federal grants. We will actually be reducing our fleet, which also means we reduce our gas and those expenditures to do. We will reduce what we anticipated we'd be putting into some of our e-business improvements and expansion. So in other words, our IT will be experiencing some reductions in it.
Ms. Hallbeck, did you say you're going to be reducing out-of-state travel? I thought we got rid of that the last two budget rounds. I didn't know there was any left.
There's very little left, but there is some left. And so we are absolutely nothing for training, only for the work that we do with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that they require as part of their grants. So the discretionary is completely gone.
How much is that, do you know?
This year we budgeted $80,000 total for it.
For what's left?
Yes. The other two things in the administrative that we will be doing is ending two interagency agreements that we pay for work done by other agencies. In the case of workers' compensation, we have an agreement with DNR, and we will be doing that work. And we have an agreement with the Department of Revenue on processing some of our fees, and we will be doing that work ourselves. So again, those are the sorts of reductions we're in. We're really into the sorts of reductions that if we do much more, we're not operating. The same is true in our outside of permitting and those, the travel that you will see us reducing and even the internal state is what we have now down to the bare minimum in order to maintain inspections, permitting, and those activities. As we move to the environmental fund, we will see first in the air program, we'll be eliminating three vacancies. We will be reassigning staff again to funded activities. And we will cut in-state travel and that. And that is somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15% we're reducing our in-state travel across the board. The environmental assistance and cross-media, again, we'll be taking some of our staff and moving them to funded and priority activities. We will be ending our support of the Environmental Education Task Force, and we'll be reducing those same operational costs. In the land program, we will be eliminating half an FTE that's funded and eliminating a staff position devoted to asbestos, but picking up the work by our other solid waste compliance people. So as we work with buildings that are demolished and making sure asbestos is managed. We'll still be picking up that work, but doing it with existing staff. In the water programs, there are three funded vacancies not in the Clean Water Fund area that we'll be eliminating. We will be reducing staff response to county feedlot inspectors, our partners, and we will be focusing our staff on the permitting and compliance activities. In the remediation fund, we'll be reducing. We have an opportunity right now to reduce in our voluntary investigation and cleanup. We have some direct appropriation, but we also have a fee for service in that area. The work has slowed down, so we have moved staff to Superfund projects and the other, and from that staff savings, we would return that. On the last page, you'll see how the grants we have and reduced again. The goal was a 6% reduction in the grants area of unspent dollars. In the general fund, our grants are only in the water area. There are two primary grants, ongoing grant programs, that of the Clean Water Partnership and the County Feedlot Program. We elected not to reduce the County Feedlot Program, as that's their ongoing labor cost for the counties to manage the inspections at those facilities less than 1,000 animal units. So we wanted to maintain that partnership. We did propose to eliminate the Stormwater Compliance Grant for FY10. It was only funded in fiscal year 10. It's a new program, and we thought best to end a new program before starting it rather than reducing the ongoing programs. In the Clean Water Partnerships, we elected to reduce those for fiscal year 10. That would be about a 3.6% reduction. In FY11, it's about a 13% reduction. Both of those still maintaining the base higher than we proposed last year as a base level needed to make sure we weren't supplanting. And that would eliminate about 4 to 5 projects. In the environmental fund, our grants in this are really in the environmental assistance and the cross media. And so again, a 6% target across them. We would propose to eliminate the composting grants as a new program not yet started.
Reduce. Ms. Hallbeck, it says you had 8 applications received and approved for funding.
Approved. That's
so,
correct.
So they're ready to go out?
Correct, ma'am.
I guess I'd be interested. I see that you have that on a couple of these. It would be useful to know which programs will be funded or eliminated from funding specifically, if you could give us any information on that.
I can. Okay. To do the compost grants would be a complete elimination, mm-hmm. So there would be nothing. In the environmental assistance grants, there's $119,000 that is appropriated to it, so this takes more than half of that. Allows us to do some funding this year and allows some funding for fiscal year 11 as well. We chose not to eliminate all in one year, but to do it in a balanced approach across both. So it would eliminate essentially one to two projects a year. That's not a highly funded one, and in the past, as we have had some additional funding in the environmental fund, we have moved additional dollars into this area and have had larger grants. But this year, with the budget reductions as they were, we ended up just with the 119. With the reductions in the Metro landfill grants, this is part and connected to the SCORE grants. As you might remember, last year we had quite a bit of discussion around SCORE grants and this. The $100,000 each year, again, would be a balanced approach, and it will impact the ability for metro counties to provide some additional grants to their municipalities in the work. This is about 13% of their grants. So this is $750,000 about each year, and this would be $100,000 of that. In the SCORE grants, this goes to all of our counties who are working in the solid waste area. We again smooth out the reductions each year. That's about a 2.3% reduction. So there's $14,250,000 each year. So this is a little bit more. Last year we added $250,000 to it. This is a little bit more than what we added last year. And the last area is the e-waste grants. This is a new program. We put out one RFP this year for the e-waste grants. Very few of them, as we scored them, met the minimum level they need for us to approve the grants. And so we're doing a second RFP for the first round of these. This would eliminate the second round that we intimidated with new dollars. So we'll still have e-waste grants this year. This would have been an additional $150,000 that we would have done.
Ms. Hallbeck, I guess on these grants, I'd like to get, if you had something a little more detailed that explains the criteria for the grants or, you know, how you expect, just a little more information about how they would have, what they would have gone to. That would be helpful.
Madam Chair, we do have that, so we can send that over.
Thank you. All right. And did you want to go through the other sheet?
The other sheet, Madam Chair, is really just the kind of budgeting for this. You'll see it in a little bit more detail. And it's just the number conversion of this.
Okay, Senator Fredrickson, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Ms. Hallbeck, I have three questions. Starting with the SCORE grants, would those reductions be across the board? As I recall the SCORE grant law, there's a minimum amount that counties receive. Would you also reduce that minimum amount, or would this be only on the larger ones, or how would you implement that?
Ms. Hallbeck.
Madam Chair, Senator, the minimum amount would still be there. Last year we clarified that whether the increase is there or the decrease, it's about the increase or the decrease and how that gets spent. So the minimum would still be there for everyone. So we first pay across to everybody the minimum, and then there's a different part of the formula that if we get more money, people get more. If there's less, there's a reduction.
Madam Chair, I think we should be sure and understand that radiation.
That impact. That's a very good question.
And the second question I have is actually on page 3, the ending support for the Environmental Education Task Force. That would you would completely stop that activity or completely stop funding them?
Madam Chair, Senator, that is correct. That is down. That used to be a board and a committee, and that is a couple of years ago the legislature did away with the board, and we've been operating it as a task force with some small amount of money, and so we would be eliminating that.
Ms. Hallbeck, how much money is that?
That, I'll double-check it, but we're in the $10,000 to $15,000 range.
The last question I have is on page 2 under the guiding principles. It's about the fifth bullet down. It says move our closed landfill programs to maintenance. And I find the phrase to maintenance ambiguous. I don't know what that means.
Ms. Hallbeck.
Madam Chair, Senator, what we're rapidly trying to do, had we received the bonding request we made this year, we would have all construction done in that program within 3 years. And so the maintenance for us is we will have the construction done, we will have the land use planning components done for it, and we'll just simply do O&M operation and maintenance.
Ms. Hallbeck, that helps. But I didn't know if that's what you were planning or if that had to do with maintaining some stream of funding. Clarified it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Frederickson. Ms. Hallbeck, are you under a hiring freeze in your state agency?
Madam Chair, we are under a hiring restriction. And for us, in order to put all of our budgets and balance in there, we have not hired vacancies and filled vacancies for nearly 2 years in order to make the budget balance. So we have reduced our overall staffing by about 10%.
Since
March of 2008.
Overall staffing across the agency?
Yes.
And across all funds?
Yes.
It's March 2008. And that's mostly through vacancy, through attrition, not layoffs directly?
Madam Chair, that's correct. We have not laid off anyone at this point.
I would like, if you could get me some information about how many employees are in the agency now under the different funds across the agency, that would be helpful just to put it in perspective. And general fund, other funds. And the constitutional funds. That would be very helpful. Since the last budget was passed and the unallotments were done. So just the most current information. And one more question. Can you just remind all of us, if you could go through the environmental fund and the remediation fund and the special revenue fund. Just remind us the sources of funding for those funds, please.
Madam Chair, members, the special revenue fund is funded through either revolving funds or agreements that we have. So any agreement we have for an EIS project, for instance, that fund that recovers our costs goes back into the special revenue, and then eventually it goes into it. We also charge across all of our funds an indirect rate. You hear from DNR, they call it shared services. It's that program, how we manage our contract staff, our fiscal staff. That goes in there.
So some of it revolves within the agency and some outside?
That's correct. And others, our training accounts are in there, so our certification and training accounts. That's what the special revenue is.
And the environmental fund?
The environmental fund is funded from a number of sources, primarily the solid waste tax, the percentage of the solid waste tax that comes to there. 70% of the solid waste tax coming in. The other 30% goes to the general fund. Then we have air, water, hazardous waste fees that come into the general fund, or into the environmental fund, excuse me, to do. We are also funded by a portion of the motor vehicle transfer fee that comes in. That funded and does help fund the non-point air work. So when we used to do motor vehicle and we do the inspection programs to make sure our engines were operating well, that's part of what funded that. Now it helps fund our other non-point work to do. So that is the majority of them. There's probably some small fees in there that I missed.
And then on the environmental fund, the fees that we changed or the rulemaking process that will change the fees since the last year, where is that? Is new revenue coming in at this point? Or maybe some of your permitting activity is reduced because of economic downturns? What's happening with that?
Madam Chair, the fees are not completely in and effective yet.
Okay.
They're nearing completion, though. We would expect those to be completed through the process in early March. You recall that applications are retroactive to July 1, and so we will be back
That's
invoicing
right.
for some of those.
Okay.
The training, the change in the training where you ask that all of our training operations fund those, as we've been doing the training, those fees are coming in to do. And then the other fee change that I forgot to mention was actually the compliance and enforcement penalties that come in. 100% of those dollars now come into the environmental fund instead of being split between. So those are coming in. We have seen a reduction in permit applications. So just in the existing fees, we've seen a reduction of that. We'll know more where that exactly lies after this spring, where we truly do all of our annual fee invoicing. And that happens once a year, and that happens now. And you have the best sense of how many hazardous waste generators have gone out of business or changed. The same with some of the other operating businesses.
Okay. And then finally, the remediation fund, the sources of revenue?
The sources of revenue for the remediation are transfer from the environmental fund. There are specific penalties that go into the remediation fund. And then there are insurance recovery dollars that go into that. A portion of natural resource damages money that gets split, again, between the DNR and the agency that goes. And I might be missing, but that's pretty much the majority of them.
All right. Other questions? Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Hallbeck. Would any of these proposed reductions result in a lengthened time to receive permits for expansion or starting a new industry or business? Because one of the complaints we periodically hear about the Pollution Control Agency is from somebody who wants to start a new business, start a new industry. They've applied for permits, and it seems to them to take a longer time than it needs to get the permit and get up and operating. And in this time of decline in the economy where we want people to start businesses here and provide jobs, it seems to me we should be sensitive to that. So my question is, will any of these lengthen the amount of time it takes for the issuance of permits from your agents, from your side of that permitting process? I realize if the industry or the proposer doesn't submit the information timely and doesn't do what you require, it'll take a longer time, but turn around in your agency.
Madam Chair, Senator, we do not anticipate that this will increase the length of time for permitting. Maintaining the timeliness improvements that we've done in the last 5 years is still a priority for the agency. And we will still maintain that. That's why you'll see in the feedlot program, for instance, we may draw back on our work with our county partners, but that's so that we can maintain the permit timeliness. And the same is true for other programs. So we will be watching that to make sure, or we will again have to shift from other areas to make sure that the permitting is done on time.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Hallbeck, and this has been very helpful. I'm just looking at your spreadsheet here, and question, just because I'm not sure, when I'm on the side that says 3% holdback on agency operations by fund.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the new allocations, or are these the cuts that you're showing in these columns?
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, these are the reductions.
The proposed cuts.
Can you give us a sense of what the original was? For example, in the children's toxic chemicals of concern. So you're cutting 34.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Hallbeck.
The amount that we get to our agency is $64,000 each year. Then there is an additional amount that moves through our agency to the Department of Health of $465,000 per year. We did not impact what is going to the health department. So when that bill passed, we have a very small role in that. And while we're continuing to work on this, We thought, again, that that's mainly a function of the Department of Health. Preserve that function, reduce our area.
Thank you.
So, I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow. I mean, I the number that you said, the 34 and the 64, is that the whole PCA amount?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. So does the PCA have anything that they have to do in the next year in this area? I mean, we just heard the report yesterday in part from the PCA about creating the list. So what will that work continue?
Madam Chair, members, we are continuing the work of what we believe gets us through this fiscal year, and then we'll have to evaluate what work we do relative to this for the next fiscal year. We will meet all of our obligations in this fiscal year with the money afforded.
You mean in calendar 2010 or in fiscal?
Fiscal year 2010.
Okay, starting next July. Wait, starting.
No.
We're in fiscal year 2010.
Correct.
Okay. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had similar questions. But in the other side of the same document, there are two reductions to the storm water compliance grants that go to zero, and then the e-waste program that goes to zero. Does that mean that these two programs are completely eliminated?
Madam Chair, Senator, they're a little bit different. So that's a very good question. The compliance grant, that would go to zero. There was only $100,000 awarded and only awarded for fiscal year 2010. For the e-waste, what we are doing is eliminating in fiscal year 2010, but not reducing anything in fiscal year 2011. So it will still, fees will still be paid. And then we will be, as it gathers the funds, so once there's enough in the base there, we will do e-waste grants again. So it's kind of a revolving thing to do. So there's no reduction in the e-waste grant program in fiscal year 11, only the extra in 2010, because we're just getting started, and so there were not as many applicants this year as we anticipated.
All right, thank you. Mr. Mueller, do you want to talk about the funds?
Sure. Madam Chair and members, just a reminder that all these reductions that we're seeing in other funds, the remediation, special revenue, and environmental, are all just one time. So they're just one-time reductions, and those savings then are just going to be transferred to the general fund. So it only helps the general fund in the current biennium, but all these, you know, like the SCORE grant decrease and everything, it will go back up to its $14.25 million in the tails. But so a lot of these reductions, while they help us out of our current biennium deficit, they don't do a lot for the ongoing structural deficit that the legislature is looking at.
And members, since we have almost a full house right now at the table, I just remind members who weren't here at the beginning that we will be passing our budget, our supplemental budget, out of this committee a week from Thursday, so March 4th, and we have to come up with cuts of $19.15 million in general fund reductions. And you know, we've been asked to try to maximize the amount of those cuts that are permanent cuts rather than one-time cuts. So just keep that in mind. Senator Dill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what percent is that?
Mr. Mueller, I was just asking him that.
Madam Chair and Senator Dill, of our current general fund base, that amount is about 5.8% of the total general fund money in fiscal year 10 and 11 that this division has. That accounts all the agencies. So it's about a 5.8 reduction of the total amount of general fund money that this division has.
Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Mr. Mueller, what did the governor cut? What percent did he cut? Or what amount?
The total amount the governor sort of did it to his total amount of just general fund reductions were only $5.9 million, but then he did other reductions and other fund transfers that got about another close to $10 million. So his total general fund fix for this area is about a little bit less than $16 million. So the amount of either additional cuts or fund transfers, everything that the Senate target has is going to be about a little over $3 million more than the governor.
And I think all the agencies had to divide their cuts, at least the ones we've heard, into 3% operating, 6% grants, and so that was how they. I don't know if there was an overall percent target that they had to meet, but that was their guidance. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the $19 million that this committee has to cut, could we reduce that amount by whatever we were willing to do in transfers that the governor recommended? I mean, if we were to do the governor's $9.9 million in transfers, is the real cut number then 10?
Yes, we can get to our target with transfers or just straight general fund cuts. But the transfers are one time unless we make them permanent. I mean, I suppose we could make them permanent. But the governor's rec does not. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can get there.
All right.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hallbeck.
Thank you.
All right, next we're going to hear from the Met Council, and then we have the Minnesota Zoo and the MCC. All right, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program at the Metro Council, and I'll speak just to the reduction in the parks funding, and then my colleagues here will speak to you regarding water planning and influent infiltration. The governor supplemental budget reductions is in a handout that's being passed around. Essentially, on page one of that report, last year he unallotted 2.25% or $86,000 from the $3.8 million general fund appropriation, regional parks operations and maintenance. And then now he is recommending a 3% additional permanent reduction of $112,000 that would go into effect for fiscal year 2011 and on into future years, plus ratifying his unallotment from last year of $86,000 a year. So the net effect is that the $3.8 million base appropriation would be reduced of $198,000 to $3,612,000. And page two of your report illustrates the fiscal impact on each of the 10 regional park agencies that receive funds from this appropriation. And the yellow column illustrates the amount that would be reduced for that agency's share of the appropriation. And then the far right-hand column illustrates the amount that they will receive. This is an estimate. It's based on a formula in state law. We don't have all the data at this time to crunch the numbers completely for you, but this is a pretty close approximation to what the reductions would be for each agency. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have regarding the governor's recommendations on this point.
That would be nice. All right. Thank you, Mr. Stefferud. That's very succinct. All right, are there questions? All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may speak.
Yes, sorry. Let me just go back and ask, do you have access to information from all the different park systems about what these cuts would lead to in terms of reductions in service? These are O&M dollars?
Madam Chair, that's correct. They're operations and maintenance funds. Mm-hmm. And in answer to your question, I don't have that at this point. I could get it from each of the agencies. They are aware of this, and they could reply to you. I could collect that information to you or for you and present it to you.
That would be helpful if you can come up with anything in the next few days. That would be great. Thank you. All right, who's next then?
Madam Chair, that'd be me. I'm Jason Willett, for the record, Finance Director for the Environmental Services Division of the Metropolitan Council. We're the wastewater utility for the seven-county region. If you don't know, we serve directly 105 cities in the metropolitan area. You should have just a one-page. We're trying to be... that's right. Thank you. Trying to be very brief today. This is a request for funding from the Clean Water Fund. It is in the governor's supplemental request. Inflow and infiltration is a very serious problem in wastewater treatment systems. As you know, we've all spent quite a bit of money to try and separate clear water from sanitary sewers. Nevertheless, there's a lot of it that still gets in. We have sometimes many times the dry weather flow that comes through our system that can potentially cost us hundreds of millions of dollars and would cause us all to raise rates on all of our cities, whether they have the problems or not. It's also, frankly, a waste of water resources that should infiltrate back into the ground and be available to future generations for drinking water. When we get surges of clear water in the system, we risk and occasionally have had actual spills and backups in people's houses, so there's a water quality issue as well. The Metropolitan Council has had a very aggressive program to try and eliminate II, inflow and infiltration. We have required almost 50 cities to spend a lot of their own money over the last few years to reduce the problem at the source. One of the remaining problems is actually not municipal infrastructure, although some of that still exists. And you may have heard, I'm not sure if you have already, the Metro Cities has an initiative asking for some money for municipal infrastructure fixes related to II out of the bonding bill. What we're asking for money here, for money that we would transfer to the cities for grant programs for non-municipal properties. Typically, these are foundation drains that are connected to the sanitary sewer, or in a lot of cases, this is the pipe, the service pipe that goes between someone's house and the street. They may not even know they own it, and it costs several thousands of dollars to repair it. We have had a little pilot program with some one-time money. We got a lot of attention, a lot of demand, actually, and people really wanted to see this program continued, which is why we are here asking for money. I understand there is some available in the Clean Water Fund. Just for the coming year, we would certainly work with our city partners to figure out how most equitably to disperse that money. It can save, as I said, as part of the overall program, hundreds of millions of dollars, a lot of money. It saves water, a lot of Minnesota resources, and I think it's a program deserving of your consideration.
Are there questions? I do remember this from the bonding request, but that was only for public. I mean, if a municipality wants to fix someone's sewer pipe leaving from their home, that's considered their private property, and they'd have to pay the assessment.
Madam Chair, that is the case. The pipe on the private property goes from their house to the street. I think there may be a slight difference when it gets to the street before it actually connects to the city pipe, but the main part of the pipe there, all is private property. In a lot of cases, people don't even realize that they own that pipe. And it can be quite deep in the ground. If the city pipe under the street is 20 feet deep, you know, the pipe from the house has to get down there. In the small program that we had over the last year, we were able to find $800,000 of one-time money. This isn't about planning. This is about actual work. We didn't take any money for planning or administration, but the work completed was $2.7 million. A lot of cases, the private parties were putting up the money. In one case, a city matched the grant dollars that we put up to and got quite a favorable response.
And how much, I'm sorry if you said this, how much does it cost for a typical repair, one of these smaller projects?
The average cost for the service line is about $4,800, what we've seen in the past. So we wouldn't anticipate, granting that full amount. It would just be a partial amount. The private party would have to match that. And I'm told that Senator Mensen is going to offer this bill at some point as well.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much for that presentation, Mr. Millett. And water supply is next. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Chris Elvrum, Water Supply Planning Manager with the Metropolitan Council. Governor's budget recommendation includes $500,000 from the Clean Water Fund to continue our implementation of the Master Water Supply Plan for the metropolitan area. If you may recall, last year the Clean Water Fund request was for $938,000 for fiscal year 10 and 11 for this effort, and the final bill came out with $400,000 just for fiscal year 10. So this is essentially to requesting to make up the difference. Just as a little background, the Master Water Supply Planning effort is something the Met Council has been undertaking for the last 4 years, and essentially what it does is it compares projected demands to availability of water resources. We've developed a wealth of information upon which to make decisions, including a regional groundwater model, a conservation toolbox so that cities can develop programs to help reduce water demands. And really what this funding would be used for would be to update the information. As we collect more information, we can improve those tools and improve the guidance that the plan lays forth. And so it's for things like geologic mapping. We pass some money on to the Minnesota Geological Survey. It would be to accumulate information on the connection between surface water and groundwater so we know where we do want to pump, where we don't want to pump, where they might impact wetlands and surface water features. And really it provides guidance so that communities know ahead of time what to expect. The reason that we started this effort really was that water supply was kind of a reactive situation where a community, we would plan for sewers, we'd plan for transportation and parks, and the city would begin growing and then need water. And nobody had been doing a comprehensive analysis of where water was available or where issues might be. So what we have done with this plan is provide that information up front so that communities will know ahead of time what to expect, what steps they need to undertake, so that when it comes to appropriating water and to getting permits, it's a matter of formality instead of bringing up issues kind of late in the game. So again, this is really just to make up the difference and fund our ongoing activities for the second half of the biennium.
So two out of three of you have the governor proposing spending more money. How did you guys manage that?
Madam Chair, both of the additions are from Clean Water Fund money as opposed to general fund. Unfortunately, Parks isn't in the same situation.
All right, thank you. Questions? All right, thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Adelman, Chief Financial Officer at the Minnesota Zoo. While we're making that transition, you may recall that the Minnesota Zoo had inflow infiltration problems that the legislature helped us deal with, and the staff at the Met Council were incredibly helpful working with us through that whole process. The Minnesota Zoo has been recommended for a reduction in our general fund of what ends up in the out years to be 3%. It's $221,000 for the current biennium and then $394,000 for the future bienniums. Just a little bit of context on our budgeting process. We have a board that does our budget. We're also in the middle of developing our next strategic plan, which will cover us for the next 4 years. And I'm happy to say we are an entity that actually uses the strategic plan when we make our budget decisions. So what I'm going to talk about as far as our reductions and the impact will be for the current biennium, but the decisions for the future biennium is something that we'll be looking at with the board as we do our annual budgets. For the current biennium, We'll take $50,000 out of our repair, replacement, and betterment. That takes care of the issues that don't meet the criteria of the bonding bill. It's the repairs. We have 485 acres, buildings that are over 30 years old, so we always have many more repairs than money to cover them. What this particular money had been set aside for was in our shops area. We had hoped to bring in an architect. With our aging workforce, the shops really are not set up in the most efficient way for health and safety reasons. We meet all of OSHA standards, but as the workforce ages and where the various levels are, we think we could do a better job, and we were going to bring in some outside expertise to help us with that. That will be postponed until we can work that back into the repairs budget. We'll also be reducing money from our marketing budget. This is a budget that over the past few years we've tried to build up, which has resulted in great results. You may recall that we had the highest attendance in the past year and the highest number of members in the past year due to both exhibits and also marketing campaigns that have won both national and international recognition. What we're cutting out is a viral marketing campaign that we had hoped to do. You may be familiar with last year's viral marketing campaign, which was the Hoop Hooped game on the web, which got actual national news attention. We had hoped to do something like that this year, but we're reducing those funds. Employee development. This is one of those areas that you always look to first when you have to make budget reductions. I personally, working on the HR side also, believe that long-term that's not a good decision, nor is it sustainable. We are not eliminating our employee development, but we are reducing some of that. And this isn't just sending people to training classes, but we believe employee development is allowing our staff to head up species survival plans, working with other zoos, and doing those types of things. So we'll be reducing that. The other piece, again, is a short-term fix, but we cannot deal with it as a permanent cut, and that's looking at our exhibits. We have to plan what we're going to do several years out, and we have to do that from the standpoint of what will we open that will keep people coming through the door. We can't do the Russia's Grizzly Coast big exhibit every year, so we need to do something fresh to keep the members coming back, to keep the public coming back. To do that, we have to look at small exhibits and things that we can do, and then we have to do it early so that we can market that, and we also have to bring the animals in, and transport permits take a lot of time. What we'll be doing is reducing money that we were going to put into planning not what we're opening this summer, but what we're looking at down the road. Our nocturnal exhibit, we closed that, and we're hoping to reopen that at some point with reptiles and herps, which people either really love or really don't care for. But our guests are continually requesting that we have more snakes and more lizards. So we won't have the money to begin that planning that we had hoped. But again, as we work through our strategic plan, we'll be looking at long-term budget implications.
Okay. Ms. Edelman, did you tell us the total dollar amount? We have it on our spreadsheet, but let's repeat that.
Madam Chair, and the current biennium, it's $221,000. Okay. And then in the future years, it's $394,000. And that's because we did not have a lot of general fund money in the current year to actually go in and apply the percent. So you'll see it's 1.7% on your spreadsheet, but in the future years, it's the 3%.
And if the let's hope that the bonding request goes through and eventually, sooner or later, and will this affect your ability to utilize those new bonding dollars and do the programming, you know, what goes along with those investments?
Madam Chair, if the bonding bill goes through at the level that was in all of the various iterations, this will not impact that. Actually, this will be more of an impact if the bonding bill does not go through as we try and plan those smaller exhibits. We won't have something to open a year and a half from now.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? All right. Thank you.
Since we are cutting our marketing dollars, just to let you know, we are opening, and you'll all receive invitations, Faces of the African Forest over Memorial Weekend. But more importantly, for Senator Vickerman, this is our 10-year anniversary of the family farm. And we will be celebrating our family farm, starting with farm babies in April and taking it all the way through to a harvest celebration in October. So come out to the Zoom.
So this is your new marketing plan, is just come to our committee and make an announcement, and you can do that anytime you need to. All right, for free. Thank you. Last but not least, we've got Len Price. Senator Price, welcome. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. It's good to be here.
I'd like to, first of all, reiterate the announcement that we made. We have changed our name. We are now Conservation Corps Minnesota. So just put the Minnesota on the end. And this all came about as an analysis of our marketing. And people said, well, we are not a state agency. We're not part of a state agency anymore. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. Our business is conservation, and our participants are Corps members. So Conservation Corps, and we're in Minnesota. We aspire to be in other states as well. In fact, we have this past year started a small corps in Iowa. That's a story for another time, but some folks hope that someday we'll have a corps in every one of the Midwest states, so maybe we'll go back to MCC, Midwest Conservation Corps. I have no idea. I probably won't be around long enough to see all that happen. But thank you for inviting me to come in and talk about what these recommendations from the governor's budget would mean to us. We basically get two sources of revenue from the state of Minnesota. One of them is the dedicated fund called the Natural Resource Fund. And when we left the DNR in 2003, part of the departure package, if you would, was that we would receive $490,000 each year in dedicated revenue to help the DNR do its work and also to help the Conservation Corps have some revenue to have work. And so any reduction in that amount of money obviously means the DNR will get less work done in those areas that are designated with the dedicated funds. So it could be water recreation, trails, it could be wildlife, it could be whatever those categories are that we negotiate X number of hours of work with the agencies, with the divisions within the agency. So if there's a reduction of, I think it's $22,000 is what the spreadsheet shows, we'll do $22,000 less work. It's that simple. The general fund dollars have traditionally been used by us for our general operating expenses, things like equipment, fleet, leases, in engaging our summer youth in our summer youth program. Most of our young adult Corps members we've been able to actually fund through fee-for-service work with a variety of project partners. But we do rely upon the youth revenue to go, or the general fund dollars to go help fund that youth program. So if there's a reduction, we would more than likely reduce the number of youth in the 8-week summer program. A typical expenditure is about $4,000 per Corps member in the youth program. We currently have plans for 13 crews. We've got work lined up for 13 crews of young people this summer. So if there's a reduction, then we would probably have to reduce a whole crew, would be our expectation. And we do pay those young people a small training stipend, so they would not receive that. That would not get into the economy or help their families. You know, we're not a jobs program. We are a training program, a youth development program. So any reduction will reduce our ability to engage in that kind of work. We certainly want to be part of the solution, not part of any further problems. We feel pretty good that when I sit here and listen to all the other folks that have come before you today, their cuts are much, or, I'm sorry, the recommended cuts are much larger than what has been designated for us. So, you know, I guess that's, you're supposed to walk out of the room feeling pretty good about that. And we just are interested in having young people have the opportunity to do hands-on environmental stewardship kind of work. And any support that we can get financially for continuing our programs, we're appreciative of. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm open to any questions.
All right. Thank you so much for the presentation. Are there questions? Well, thank you very much. And just stay in touch with us as we put our budget together.
Thank you.
Sure you will. Thank you. Members, we're amazingly enough ahead of schedule here. So we're going to adjourn. And just to remind you, Thursday we'll hear from Commerce, the Office of Energy Security, I think probably the PUC. I don't know if they have anything in the budget. No changes, so not the PUC. We're also going to get our update, I believe, from the Office of Energy Security on the stimulus funds and the energy programming that we funded in last year's appropriation in Senate File 657. And we required them to do, I think, quarterly reports. And so we're going to get an update on how that's going. So it'll be a full agenda for Thursday. All right. If there's no other questions, just stay in touch. And we need everyone's ideas to figure out where, you know, what our recommendations to the Finance Committee should look like for this budget. So let's all stay in touch and be working together on that. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.